Good evening. It is a privilege to be able to come and share with you this evening. And yes, thank you very much for coming out. I know that it takes a lot of effort to come to church on Monday night. I know that. So thank you very much for being here. And yes, my wife Evelyn is very faithful in traveling with me. And we both grew up in northern Indiana in the Goshen area. About 19 years ago, we fell in love with a little dairy farm up in Hayward, Wisconsin. And all five of our children were still living at home yet at that time. And so we moved up to Hayward, and we milked cows for about 10 years. But when the children got old enough to go their separate ways, our milk cows went down the road. Mother and I didn't want to do it by ourselves. And so... I guess we do have a couple farmers, dairy farmers here. Are they here tonight? Okay, thank you. And just for the record, in case you're wondering if we miss our cows, yes, we do miss our cows, but mostly just twice a month, okay? So, okay, we do have five children. Two of them are married, and the Lord has blessed us. We do have 10 grandchildren. And so, enough... on that subject. If we could have just these front lights turned off yet, I think it's going to help a little. Thank you. That'll be great. Anybody ever read this before? I came across this about a year and a half ago in the Beside the Still Waters booklet. And I sort of liked the way the writer put it. And so I quickly made up a slide. Well, in the next picture here, you can see that we are the other CAM, and yes, people do get us confused sometimes with Christian Aid Ministries, but we are a total separate company from Christian Aid. And we're not insulted by that, but I do like to make sure that people know that we are the original CAM. So, okay, I like the verse in John 13, verse 35. Where Jesus said, "By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another." And I think if we have that kind of love for each other that Christ intended for us to have, I think we'll have an automatic desire to want to reach out and help each other. And especially if somebody suffers a loss of some type. And yeah, that's what mutual aid is all about, is just helping each other. And I think it can be a wonderful testimony to a community when people say, "Oh yes, that's where the Mennonites live. They help each other." And yes, our neighbors are watching us. Our neighbors watch us more closely than we're aware of at times. And you know, it's been said before, we're the only Bible that some people read. And yes, our neighbors do watch us. A couple of years ago, my older brother had a real nasty chimney fire at his house. They're getting the hoses stretched out. They don't even have the water turned on yet. In the next picture here, they do have the water turned on. They're knocking it down, but you can see that fire burning out through the ventilator in the roof, and it's got a real serious start on things. It was a couple months after this happened that the people in town were still talking about how when that Mennonite family had their house fire, how the whole church pitched in to help them out. Well, of course we do that. We've been taught that all our lives, haven't we? To help each other. Yes, I think so. I think that's part of our heritage, isn't it? That's part of our identity, isn't it? Some of you might remember about 4.5 years ago, there was a real bad farm accident at Harrisonburg, Virginia. It was a middle-aged father and his wife and their two daughters and their hired man lost their lives in a manure pit accident on a dairy farm just outside of Harrisonburg, Virginia. I remember reading about it on my computer, on my Yahoo News, on my computer. And I'm convinced that just the fact that it was a Mennonite family, the news reporters, they just sort of flocked in there and they wrote extra articles about that farm accident. And I remember over the next couple days, I read 3 or 4 different articles on the national news about that farm accident. And one of the writers, at the end of her article, and I believe it was a lady that wrote this particular article, and at the end of her article, she wrote, "The Showalter family lived in a quiet Mennonite community where the ladies hang up each other's laundry. And I thought, well, now, isn't that nice? Maybe you ladies here in Kansas hang up each other's laundry. You see, up in Wisconsin, where we live, the ladies don't do that very much. Well, I'll confess that when I read that, and right there on the national news, it sort of caught me off guard. And I remember sitting back in my chair, and I read that thing the second time. I probably read it the third time. And I was asking myself, now, why did that lady write that? And you know, I don't know, but I suspect that probably somebody had told that lady that the Mennonites help each other. And she didn't know what that meant. But she was a writer. She had to come up with something. And so that's what it said right there on the national news. And it, you know, I think it's all right to smile about that. But, you know, I think it bears out the fact that the people of the world know that we plain people have a real strong sense of community. And you might ask, well, Mike, what do you mean by that? We care about each other. Yeah. And we demonstrate that in different ways. But one of the ways is by helping each other in time of need. But sometimes it's just being there for each other in time of sickness or sorrow or death. Somebody's in the hospital, we go visit them. When there's a death in the community, we go to the viewing. We attend the funeral if possible, just to be there for our friends and our families. And of course, we pray for each other. And you see, it's because of this. This is why we practice mutual aid. Because we care about each other. And I'll take it a step further. I think our neighbors see this. And our neighbors envy us for this. They wish they had that kind of a relationship with their neighbors. Quite often, they don't even know who their neighbors are. And so, yes, this is an important part of our testimony. And I don't think the idea of helping each other is a new idea by any means. And yes, maybe it is a throwback to the good old days. Many of us still remember hearing our fathers and our grandfathers talk about how those farmers used to own that threshing machine together, and they took it from farm to farm helping each other. Ich bin zu jung, yep, so leben at Kalfa, dresch machine fitra. But hey, I've watched it from a distance already, and I know there was more than one reason they helped each other. Now, that was a very labor-intensive operation. It took a lot of hands to make that operation run smoothly. And maybe I ought to just ask for a show of hands. How many of you have helped feed a thresh machine already? There we go. You bet. I figured that might be the case. And I've noticed this one that's sitting beside the highway just a couple miles up the road here. I've noticed that one sitting there. Well, even though I never helped feed a thresh machine, I still remember when I was a boy, and I remember when the neighbor's barn burned down and how the whole church got together and built a new barn for the neighbor. And when I was a boy growing up, I had a couple chances to help bend a few nails on some of those projects. And yeah, you know, those were good days. We got a lot of work done in today's time, but there was a lot of fun. There was a lot of fellowship. And yes, of course, there was always lots of good food to eat. You bet. Those were good days. And you know, I think we're missing out on some blessings today. We don't do that as much anymore. Not as many of us are farmers. And so we don't get together and help each other as much anymore as what they used to. But yeah, sometimes I think we have a little bit of an attitude problem sometimes. Yeah, I need a new garage. I need a new shed. But sometimes our attitude is, I can afford to do this. I'll just call the pole building company and have them come and build my new garage for me. Or have them come and build my new shed for me. Instead of calling my brother and say, hey, we're going to frolic at our house Saturday morning. Why don't you all come and help us build our new garage? So I think we're missing out on some blessings today. Just one more challenge. When John F. Kennedy was inaugurated president of the United States, he gave a challenge to the American people. And I suspect that some of you remember when he said that. And I think this is the way he put it. He said, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. And I'd like to just borrow from his idea a little bit tonight. And I'd like to challenge us tonight. Let's not ask, well, Mike, what's this CAM outfit going to do for me, Mike? What's in this for me? How is CAM going to improve my bottom line? No, I don't think we ought to ask that. We might be disappointed. But instead, I think we ought to ask, well, Mike, How can I reach out and help my brother that got hit by a tornado? He lives way down in Arkansas or way over there in Missouri. We live way out here in Kansas. How can we reach out and help him? Because, yes, I think it's when we start reaching out and helping other people, that's when God really starts blessing us in a special way. And so, yes, I am very thankful. Mike, you mean that a family down there in Arkansas? You mean that's my brother? Mike, I don't even know that family down there. Are you sure that's my brother? Yes, that's your brother, even though I'm not acquainted with him either. But that's our brother. So I am very thankful that 50 years ago, there were three ministers up in northern Indiana, up there in the Middlebury area. Some of you might have known them. Eli Miller was the bishop at the Town Line Conservative Mennonite Church. And, of course, Daniel Brontrager, one of the ministers there at the Woodlawn Beachy Amish Church. And then Clarence Yoder was the bishop at the Pleasant Grove Conservative Mennonite Church. And these men had a burden for the church. They saw the need for a sharing plan. And it's no secret, all three of these men came from Amish background. How many of you knew these men? I figured probably some of you may have known all three of them, but I'm sure a bunch of you knew who Daniel Brontrager was. Yes, they saw the need for a sharing plan, but they had a vision. They had an idea. And I don't have all the details, I honestly, but maybe it went a little bit like this. I can imagine them getting their heads together. You know, the way we used to do it, we used to pass the hat, and that was a good way. But you know, if we'd try to pass the hat every time a tornado hits somebody's chicken house down in Kentucky or Tennessee, or somebody in Arkansas or Missouri gets hit with a tornado, or somebody in Ohio or Wisconsin has a chimney fire and their house burns down, if we'd try to pass the hat every time something happened, some Sundays we might have to pass it twice, maybe three times. Yeah, furthermore, I wouldn't even know what my share is to put into the hat every time the hat comes around. And so these three men got their heads together. Hey, why can't we have an organized system so we can all pitch in and help? And so I know what my share is to put into the hat when the hat comes around. So that was the beginning of the Conservative and Amish Mennonite Mutual Aid Society back in 1958. Well, today we just call it CAM, Mutual Aid Association. But today, we still pass the hat. We pass the hat twice a year. We pass the hat in January. And we pass the hat again in July. And what my share is to put into the hat? My share is based on how God has blessed me, how God has blessed me with my house and my furniture, my business equipment, my farm buildings, my farm machinery, my livestock. But it's based on how God has blessed me. That's what my share is to put into the hat when the hat comes around. And so I make a list. I make a list of my house and my furniture. I make a list of my business and my business equipment. I make a list of my farm buildings, my farm machinery, my livestock. And based on that list, I pay an assessment in January and again in July when the hat comes around. And yeah, we sort of have to bear in mind, we were talking about this family down here in Arkansas that got hit by a tornado. And we're trying to figure out what every person's share is to put into the hat. And see, the only basis that CAM, the only way CAM has to figure out what each person's share ought to be is based on how God has blessed us. It's based on my assessment, what I've got listed. And so I really don't list my house and my furniture and my business. I really don't list all that because I hope that someday I'll get paid for that. No, I'm listing that so I know what my share is to put into the hat to help this poor family down here that got wiped out by a tornado, see? And so the Bible tells us, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Galatians chapter 6, verse 2. And that's been the motivation for CAM for many, many years. I like verse 10 in the same chapter. It says, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, but especially unto them who are of the household of faith. Here's a picture of our office building. It's located up at Middlebury, Indiana. For those of you that are acquainted up there in Middlebury, it's about a mile west of town, out there on US 20, just around the curve a little bit from that big Essenhaus restaurant. We have two people that work full-time in our office there at CAM. CAM is a church-based mutual aid association established in October of 1958. And so, yeah, a couple years ago, we celebrated our 50th anniversary. Today, we still serve the conservative Mennonite churches, as well as the Amish Mennonite, the Beachy churches, fellowship churches, charity churches. We have quite a number of Old Order Amish people that are part of CAM. We have quite a number of New Order Amish churches that are part of CAM. But we also have a number of Old Brethren German Baptist people that are part of CAM. And we've got a number of Dunkard Brethren churches that are part of CAM. So you can see we're not just exclusively Mennonite, but we are plain people. CAM is a brotherhood sharing plan. Somebody gets hit by a tornado, somebody has a fire, we all pitch in and help share their loss with them. We are not an insurance company. Yes, we do operate similarly to insurance companies in some aspects, but CAM is not an insurance company. And yes, this does take the place of house insurance. But I do like to point out, CAM does not provide liability insurance to our members. And we're not saying that you don't need that kind of insurance. But if you need that kind of insurance for your business, for your property, you do have to buy your liability insurance from an insurance man in town. All right? And yes, I carry liability insurance on my farm. And the guy I buy it from said, "Well, Mike, we'd like to sell you fire insurance on at least one of your buildings." And so I told him, "Okay, I've got this 40-foot by 100-foot pole building. It sits out back. That's my heifer barn. I'll buy fire insurance from you on that building if I can buy a liability policy for my farm." So he's happy and I'm happy, all right? And so sometimes we're able to buy standalone liability policies like that. And I was just made aware that you've got a local man here from Cedar Crest that's actually an agent for the Goodville Mutual Insurance Company out of Pennsylvania. And I've talked to Herman Bontrager, the president of Goodville Mutual, and he said, "Mike, we're very happy to write around liability policies for CAM members." And so, okay. And sometimes people, "Well, Mike, do I really need liability insurance? What's liability insurance good for?" Well, liability is what pays for someone else's property if they think it was your fault that their property got damaged. Okay, so if you've got a cow that gets out on the road and along comes your neighbor in his shiny four-wheel drive pickup truck and he hits your cow, he might get the idea, "Hey, it was your cow, you got to pay for my pickup truck." Okay, well, that would be liability. CAM is not going to pay for his pickup truck. We only pay for our members' property. Okay? Now, we talked about dairy farming a little bit. Maybe you treat a cow with penicillin if she's got mastitis or something. And yeah, you know you're supposed to keep that milk out for 3-4 days, but somebody slipped up and you get some of that mastitis milk in the bulk tank. And before you realize it, it got loaded on the truck. And you know what happens. You might get an invoice to pay for that whole truckload of milk. Well, CAM is not going to pay for that. That would be liability. And you might want to consider carrying liability insurance for situations like, or maybe we've got some chicken farmers here, or hog farmers, and maybe you don't own those animals. You just feed them on contract. But that contract you might have with the chicken company or the hog company, if the electricity goes off and your generator set doesn't start up the way it's supposed to and those fans aren't running and you got a bunch of dead birds or dead hogs, even though they're not your animals, they might say, you're liable to pay for them. So yes, in that situation, you might decide maybe you should have some liability insurance for your farm. So, all right, enough on that. CAM does provide a ministry opportunity, a service opportunity, to fulfill the law of Christ by bearing one another's burdens. And yes, we do provide assistance to our members for property losses resulting from fire, storm, theft, etc. We offer financial support as well as physical and moral support. We do have a board of directors that's made up of 9 men. And I'm not going to say very much tonight about accountability. But yes, this is our accountability, if you will. These 9 men do meet twice a year. They keep an eye on the checkbook balance. They keep an eye on the number of claims that come in, and they make decisions concerning the operation. Three of those men serve on the executive committee. Our executive committee gets together twice a month. We do have over 225 representatives. Now, we don't always have one in every church, but we do try to have at least one representing every community where we have members. And once a year, we invite all of our representatives to come up to Goshen for a meeting. And it's at that meeting up there at Goshen that our representatives elect the men that serve on the board of directors. And so that's the purpose of that nominating committee, just to draw up a slate of names for the election. And we do have three people on staff. Two of them work in the office building, plus myself. We do work very closely with many different banks. And, of course, whenever a bank gives somebody a loan to buy a property, to build a house, to buy some equipment or machinery, whatever the case might, the bank is always interested in having their risk covered. And so it's a very common occurrence at our office that our banker will call up and they want proof of insurance on one of our members. And even though we're not an insurance company, yes, most banks are happy to accept CAM as suitable coverage. And so we do have our computer at the office all programmed so that whenever a banker calls up, all our secretary has to do is enter the member's account number into the computer and then just press a button. The computer automatically prints out this piece of paper that we call our evidence of participation. It automatically puts down the representative's name and telephone number at the top. It automatically puts down the member's name and address and telephone. It automatically prints out how many dollars they have their property listed for and what their annual assessment is that they pay CAM. And if they would have a loss of some type, we do have a small deductible. And so it automatically prints that out. It even puts the name of the lien holder down there at the bottom. That makes the banker feel good when he sees the name of his company down there at the bottom. But all our secretary has to do is take that piece of paper, stick it in the fax machine, and fax it back to the bank. And the banker is usually good to go with that. And yes, that does happen 10 or 12 times a day quite often there at the office. Because we do have over 7,000 members. Actually, closer to 8,000 accounts. But a few of our members might have more than one account number. Maybe they own a house down in Phoenix, or maybe they own a house in Sarasota, Florida. And so, or maybe he owns more than one business enterprise. But a few of our members would have more than one account number. But we do have over 7,000 members. Property valuation that our members have listed with CAM, that runs right at $1.9 billion. Now, I'm not used to working with those kinds of numbers, and I'll admit that I really wasn't sure I knew how much that is. Harold, I'm not in the trash business, all right? And so I'm not used to working with those kinds of numbers. I'm not even sure our congressmen know how much money that is. But anyhow, I had to pull out a piece of paper and a pencil, and I had to start writing down zeros. You see, that would be $1,900 million worth of property that our members have listed with CAM. Now, bear in mind, we're not talking about the value of the farmland, okay? We're just talking about our houses and furniture, our businesses and business equipment, our farm buildings and our farm machinery and livestock. So we're not talking about property values. So yes, you can see God has blessed our Plain people very richly. And I don't say that lightly. We do have a great deal to be thankful for. Okay, taking a look at what the losses might run in a typical year, if there is such a thing as a typical year, but quite often the losses do run somewhere between $1 million, $2 million a year. Now you drop down there 2005 and you'll quickly notice it jumped up to $2.7 million. And yes, that was when those tornadoes went across southern Indiana. And Davis County, Indiana, was just about wiped off the map. And we have a lot of members there in Davis County. Well, even though the tornadoes hit in the fall of 2005, a lot of those claims didn't come in until close to Thanksgiving. And so in 2006, CAM paid out real close to $8.5 million in claims. And a lot of that money went to Davis County, Indiana. And that was a difficult time for CAM. You see, our kitty wasn't big enough to handle that one. And so our board of directors had to make a tough decision. They decided we would have to mail out an extra assessment to our members to help raise the money to pay all those claims. And yes, I remember bringing that envelope in from my mailbox, and it was not a good time of the year. 2 weeks before Christmas is not a good time of the year to get a big invoice that you weren't expecting. That one just sort of hit you smack in the face. I remember that my wife and I had a little conversation about that letter. We had to borrow the money to pay that, just like a lot of other people did. But you know, we got off cheap. Yeah, we got off cheap. I would much rather pay an extra assessment than have my farm get wiped out by a tornado. Huh? Yeah. It's a matter of perspective. But I've told a lot of people that. I'd much rather pay an extra assessment than have our house get wiped out by a tornado. And yes, the Bible tells us it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. I think that's what the Bible means. But I'll have to confess, some of our families stumbled over that one. Shame on us, but yeah, some of them did. Well, 2007 was a much better year, and then 2008 was a bad year for tornadoes. There were a bunch of tornadoes in 2008. So our claims were close to $4.5 million. And then in 2009, well, 2009 really wasn't too bad of a year until about the last month and a half of our fiscal year. And one of our members, ever hear of a place called Bonner's Ferry, Idaho? Yeah, way up in northern Idaho, William Byler and his sons have a big truss plant up there. They've been building trusses for close to 20 years. And one evening that building caught fire and that whole building burned to the ground. It was like a $2.5 million loss. And so, yes, our claims were a little over $5 million. Well, God was really good to us in 2010. Our losses were only $2.3 million. We were very thankful for that. We did have the privilege to pay some income taxes on that. And then in last year, 2011, was a bad year for tornadoes. In fact, I made up a little slide here. Those tornadoes started right at the beginning of January down Macon, Mississippi. One of our members had four large hog houses right side by side. And all four of those hog houses were wiped out by that one tornado. They were $100,000 a pop. And so a $400,000 loss right out of the chute there. And then Paris, Tennessee in April, one of our members has four chicken houses side by side. I mean, it was sort of interesting because only the two center ones had any damage. The outside ones weren't touched. And the two center ones weren't a total loss. But I think that claim was over $200,000. And so, but it could have been a lot worse. Tuscaloosa, Alabama is a big city, and it really got hammered. Now, we don't have any members at Tuscaloosa, but Hartselle, Alabama is only about 50, 60 miles north of Tuscaloosa. And I called my representative there, Wayne Nisley, and I've heard that name Nisley before, just in case you thought I didn't. But anyhow, so I called Wayne, and I asked him, Wayne, did you have any tornado damage? He said, Mike, about 15 miles north of our house, we had tornado damage, and about 15 miles south of our house, we had tornado damage. But as far as I know, none of our church people got hit. So we had a lot to be thankful for. Over in Union Grove, North Carolina, where there's a New Order Amish church there. And my representative, he took me out to a farm. One of our members there had just built two brand new chicken houses. They're big ones, 63 feet wide and 624 feet long. Two of them, right side by side. And those two chicken houses were not touched by the tornado. But I stood right in front of those chicken houses, and I took a picture across the fence. And there was an old chicken house over that hadn't been used for about 4 or 5 years. The roof was taken off of that old building. But these two new ones were not touched. So yes, God was really good to CAM. And then when that hurricane went up the East Coast, we've got members out there at Virginia Beach. Some of them people live within 10 miles of the ocean. And I called my rep out there, and he said, no, as far as I know, we didn't have any damage from any of our church families. I think we did end up paying a claim from Pantego, North Carolina on that hurricane, but we were very thankful. It could have been a lot worse. And then in September, when those wildfires were burning down here at Bastrop, Texas, and some of you might know some of those families down there at Bastrop. We've been down there a couple of times. And I called Paul Beachy's wife down there. He's the deacon. And she said, well, Mike, them fires came within 1 mile of some of our church family's property. But none of our church families had any damage. And yes, those wildfires burned up over 1,500 houses down there in Texas in that Bastrop, and none of our church families got any damage. So we had a great deal to be thankful for. Okay, our assessments are based on the number of claims that come in. When we do add on for our administrative expenses, and I might just explain here, CAM is a nonprofit organization. No one draws any dividends from CAM, okay? We're non-profit. However, the fact that we do return a benefit back to our members, for that reason, the lawyers do tell us that CAM does not qualify to be tax exempt. There's a difference between being non-profit and being tax exempt. And so even though we're non-profit, we are not tax exempt. So on a year like we had a year and a half ago when our claims are only $2.3 million, yes, we got to pay some income taxes to Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam loves CAM. Believe me, he loves CAM for the income taxes we pay. And so yes, we do have to add on for administrative expenses. And we are trying to build up our kitty again, our reserve fund, and because it was totally wiped out 6 years ago. And so I say that to explain this. Even though the assessments are based on the claims that come in, the assessment rates don't change every 6 months, because that's part of the board of directors' job, is to keep an eye on the checkbook balance, keep an eye on the claims, and the board of directors set the rates. And then in December, when we have our rep meeting, all the representatives get a chance to approve those rates, okay? And so they can't just decide to jack them up or to lower them. The representatives do approve any changes that are made to the rates. And so, but there is always the possibility, if we would have another major catastrophe, there's always the possibility that we might again have to send out an extra assessment. But that has only happened twice in the past 50 years. And the other time was back in 1965 when those Palm Sunday tornadoes went across northern Indiana. Now, I wasn't very old at that time. I was only about 12 years old, but I still do remember that night those Palm Sunday tornadoes went across. And a lot of our families there at Goshen, Middlebury, Shipshawana got their farm buildings wiped out. And so CAM was not a very big company at that time. And so at that time they sent out an extra assessment to the members to help raise money to pay those claims. And okay, CAM is a post-assessed organization. Now, what we mean by that is, when I mail in my check in January, I'm not paying for the next 6 months, but rather I'm paying my share for the past 6 months, okay? And so this is one of those areas where we're different from commercial insurance companies, because with a commercial insurance company, if you pay a premium, you're paying in advance. Okay, but not with CAM. Now, the way that translates into everyday business, maybe we've got a family that signs up their house. Here we are, the middle of February. If they sign up their house with us, they'll be covered from now on. But they don't get any kind of a bill in the mail, no invoice, until July rolls around, because we're post-assessed. Okay? Now, on the other hand, maybe you've got a piece of equipment that you're not using anymore, and you decide you're going to sell that piece of equipment. Or maybe you've got a couple rental houses, and that one rental house over there, that one's been more headache than it's worth, I'm going to sell that one. All right, and so you advertise that thing, you find a buyer for it, and you have a closing on it, and then after you have a closing on it, you call up Marvin Newtze, and you say, hey, Marvin, would you please call Middlebury and tell them to take that rental house off of my enlistment for me? And Marvin says, sure, I can do that. All right. Well, then when July rolls around, you get your bill in the mail. The first thing you do is you look down over that bill, and sure enough, there's that rental house. You reach for the telephone. Hey, Marvin, I thought I told you to take that thing off of there. Well, Marvin did his job, but the fact that you still had it on there for January, February, and half of March, you get to pay one more assessment on that rental house, okay? Now, it's going to be prorated. You don't have to pay for the whole 6 months, okay? Since you only had it on there for 2.5 months, it'll be prorated. But you do get to pay one more assessment. So I like to explain to our members how that works. Okay, we do have our enlistments divided into two groups. We have our primary. This is where we list our house and furniture. And then we also have a commercial enlistment, and that's where we list our commercial buildings, our farm buildings, etc. Now, the reason we call this primary instead of just calling it residential, for example, you see, we get a discount on our house and furniture. Yeah, we only pay half price on our house and furniture. But it's only on our primary dwelling. So if you happen to own a house down in Sarasota, or you own a house in Phoenix, and I was talking to Mr. Hirschberger, William here, and he said he doesn't have a house in Sarasota yet. And, he didn't really say that he was planning on it. But but if you own a house down in Sarasota, even though that's residential, that would get listed on the commercial farm, okay? And these rental houses, even though that's residential, the rental houses, they get listed on the commercial form. So we only get the discount on our primary dwelling. So that's why we call this our primary enlistment. But yes, we list our furniture, contents, garage, other outbuildings you might have. Now, as long as you don't, maybe you've got a shed or maybe you've got a barn there at your place. But if you don't keep any farm equipment in that barn, and you don't keep any livestock of any kind in that barn, you don't keep any hay or grain or feed, you're not using it for business purposes, see? You don't keep any of your construction tools in that barn. Even though it's a barn, that barn could come in on the discount on the primary, okay, if you're not using it for farm purposes. Okay, our garden tractors, lawn equipment, as long as you're not in the lawn care business, that lawnmower can be listed on the primary. Buggies, four-wheelers, bicycles, sporting equipment, that would include things like boat, motor, snowmobiles, RVs, camper trailers. Our church house, school buildings, they come in at the cheaper rate on the primary side. And incidentally, while we're right here, buggies, horse-drawn equipment, four-wheelers, sporting boat, motor, snowmobile, those items are not covered for upset and collision while they're in use. Now, yes, we list four-wheelers, boat, motor, and if they're sitting in the garage and you have the misfortune of getting hit by a tornado or you have a fire, those items are covered. But if you're on a four-wheeler and you're out there in the pasture field chasing a cow and you run into a tree, that four-wheeler is not covered for upset and collision while it's in use. Okay, same way with the boat and motor. If you're out there feeding the fish, the boat and motor is not covered for upset and collision while it's in use. Okay? Okay, moving along. Oh, yes, farming is everyone's bread and butter. Well, Mike, who needs farmers? We buy our food at the grocery store. I think we know better than that, don't we? Yeah. But you know, it's a little bit like somebody said. If you want to talk about farmers, don't talk with your mouth full. I sort of like the way that guy said it. I couldn't hardly pass on that one. And so, okay, we do list our farm buildings on the commercial form, as well as our commercial businesses, and this can be any type of a commercial business. Whether you've got a sawmill, whether you've got a pallet shop, maybe a shed building shop, mini barn shop, cabinet shop, woodworking furniture store, bulk food store, restaurant, bakery, any type of, even a choice book warehouse can be listed on our commercial enlistment. Inventory, whether it's raw inventory or whether it's finished product. Now, our inventory, we just list that as a lump sum figure. You don't have to break it apart. Okay? Rental houses can be listed on the commercial. And one exclusion that we do have on rental houses that I like to make our members aware of. If you would have some vandalism that's caused to your rental house, if that vandalism is caused by the tenant that's living in it, CAM would not share the loss with you. Most landlords charge a security deposit when they lease out that rental house. And that's the purpose of that security deposit. Somebody punches a hole in the ceiling, or they kick a hole in the wall, or tear the door off the hinges, or whatever the case might be. That's the purpose of that security deposit. Okay, and so if the vandalism is caused by the tenant, then we don't share the law. Unless it's arson. Now, if they torch the place and burn it down, then yes, then CAM will share the loss with you. Okay, secondary home, we talked about that, whether it's in Phoenix or whether it's in Sarasota or maybe just a house out here by the lake. It can be listed on our construction equipment, business equipment, tools can be listed, excavating equipment, logging equipment, tool trailers. Yes, we've had a number of our members got their tool trailers stolen in the last couple of years since the economy was in the tank. And boy, it's been a real problem. So we share the loss with them. Farm equipment, machinery gets listed on our commercial farm. Livestock, hay, grain, feed inventory. Now, we don't share crop damage in the field. But once the crop is harvested, the hay is in the mow, the grain is in the bin, the feed is in the silo, it can be listed on your enlistment. You get wiped out by a tornado, we share the loss with you. Builder's risk. Yes, we have a number of contractors that appreciate taking advantage of our builder's risk. They get a lot of material, dollars worth of material, delivered to a job site. He's at risk for that material. He hasn't been paid for it yet. Maybe they get the trusses put up on that brand new project, and along comes a windstorm and wipes out those trusses and breaks them to pieces. Now somebody's got to go buy new trusses, and CAM will share the loss with them on that if that project was listed under our builder's risk. And yes, it happens once in a while. There you go, a couple brand new chicken houses. And that particular size is pretty popular up the East Coast right now. 63 foot wide, 624 feet long. And that picture was taken on a Saturday morning and a couple hours later, and that's what it looked like. It wasn't a tornado, it was just a windstorm came in there and raised up them trusses and slammed them back down again. The wall buckled out and those trusses broke to pieces. What a mess. 250 feet of trusses broken to pieces there. Happened at dinner time on Saturday, and they didn't know what in the world they were going to do. Well, there's about seven or eight churches in the Southeastern Conference there in that greater Harrisonburg area. Now, this picture, these people here actually live just a couple miles from the West Virginia state line. But it was announced in all the Southeastern churches there on Sunday morning. We need volunteers tomorrow morning out at the Helmuth farm there to help clean up. This was James and Brenda Helmuth's farm. Some of you might remember James, came from Leon, Iowa. Monday morning, 70 people showed up with chainsaws to help clean up the mess. This is not a Mennonite community here. This is way back in the hills. But some of their non-Christian neighbors saw all these cars and pickup trucks driving in the neighbor's lane, and they came over and went, "What's going on?" And they said, "Well, come, we'll show you. These chicken houses are back in the woods. You can't see them from the road, see?" And, "Well, who are all these people that are here working?" "Well, they're friends of ours. They're volunteers that came." "What do you mean, volunteer? You mean you're not even going to pay them?" "Well, yeah, we're going to feed them lunch here." "You mean there's still people that are willing to work just to help out their friends?" "Yeah, that's right." These non-Christian neighbors were so impressed. They went back home. The lady pulled a couple bags of frozen cookies out of her deep freezer and fixed up a plate of cookies and sent her husband back over there to donate the plate of cookies to the dinner. What a testimony to the community. Yes, what a testimony. It only took them 2 hours to get that all cleaned up. They ate lunch at 11 o'clock. They were very thankful for all their friends. And you got to remember, this is Virginia. Them people in Virginia don't have tornado. They don't even know how to spell tornadoes there in Virginia. And so, yes. Okay, rental equipment. Yes, maybe you have to go to the tool shed once in a while and you rent a piece of equipment. Or even if you go to the implement dealer and you rent a tractor for a couple days or a combine or something, you read the fine print on that lease agreement. If anything happens to that piece of equipment, you're responsible for it. You're liable for it. And you've got to carry insurance on it. So all you have to do is call Marvin and tell him, "Hey, Marvin, I'm going to go lease a piece of equipment." They've already told me that's a $60,000 piece of equipment. I've got to carry insurance on it. And all Marvin has to do is make one quick phone call. You're covered. In fact, it'll cover you for up to 1 month. And it's very reasonable. It'll only cost you $25 to have that piece of equipment listed for up to 1 month. No, we don't plan on those things happening. But, you know, once in a while it does. Embarrassing, to say the least. I even know that guy that's standing up there, Dan, and it ain't me either, just in case you thought it was. So, those things happen. All right, our assessment rates. On the primary side, our assessment rate is 25 cents per $100. Now, some people prefer to talk in terms of like $2.50 a thousand for each $1,000, okay? But I like to use the illustration. Somebody would have their house listed to $100,000. They would pay $250 a year. So they would get an invoice in January for $125. They would get an invoice in July for $125. Now, if they would have a loss of some type, we do have a $250 deductible on our primary. Now, on the commercial side, our commercial businesses, farm buildings, that gets assessed at a rate of $5 a thousand. So like I said, our houses and furniture, we get a discount. We only pay half price on our house and furniture. So on the commercial side, it's $5 a thousand. Deductible runs 5% of the amount of the claim. It's what the member has to pay, and then CAM writes them a check for the other 95%. okay? And there is a $500 minimum on the loss there. Our upset and collision claims, they have a 10% deductible. All right, now an example of an upset and collision claim, I mentioned the logging equipment. And yes, we do have a number of loggers that have their logging equipment listed with CAM. Maybe they're working on a pretty steep hillside. And I know that's sort of difficult for you flatlanders to imagine, but some parts of the country, there's steep hillsides. And they're working on a steep, and somebody got a little too shustly, and he cut the corner too sharp on that with that piece of logging equipment, laid that machine right over on its side. Well, now they got to call a wrecker out there with a big winch on it to set that machine back up again. And if he wasn't quick enough to kill the engine, and that machine's laying there with the engine running, laying on its side, and there's no oil getting in the oil pump, I know you guys know enough to, it'll spin the bearings on that before you know what happened. Now it's going to kill $10,000 or $12,000 to overhaul the engine on that thing. And we're going to share the loss with him on that. We're going to let him pay 10% of the bill on that one, okay? So, all right, property valuations. Our buildings should be listed at current replacement cost. And yes, this is part of Marv Yutzi's job, is to sit down with you and help you decide what a realistic replacement cost would be on each one of your buildings that you want to list with CAM. And so replacement cost, if you would have the misfortune to get hit by a tornado and you'd have a total loss on that building, what would it cost to have a contractor come in and build you a new building just like what you've got? That's replacement cost. And that's the amount that that building needs to be listed for. And whatever amount you've got your building listed for, whether it's your house, whether it's a shed or something, but whatever amount you've got that building listed for, that is the amount that CAM will share with you if you have a total loss on that building, minus that deductible that we talked about just a minute ago, okay? But you see, 9 times out of 10, it's not a total loss. It's much more common that we just have a partial loss on a building. And so for that reason, we do stipulate that a building does have to be listed to at least 80% of replacement cost in order to get full coverage when you have a partial loss. Now, that's a mouthful. I'll try to explain what we're saying here. But let's suppose that this family does have their house listed for $100,000 because that's a realistic replacement cost, okay? So if they have a total loss on their house, CAM will mail them a check for $100,000. Minus the $250, okay? But maybe they just had a chimney fire. Do we have any firemen here tonight? I'm going to pick on you a little bit if we do, but you know how it is. By the time the fire department gets done, they get all that insulation up there in the attic all soaked down real good, and, yeah, half the sheetrock's falling off the ceiling, and the walls are full of water at the bottom. They're bulging out, and the carpeting's all ruined, and they've got half the windows busted out. Yeah, it makes a real mess. Well, maybe it's going to cost them $50,000 to get their house all fixed back up again. Okay? And so CAM will mail them a check for $50,000 minus that $250 deductible. Okay? But then we might have somebody say, yes, but Mike, you know, it was about 13, 14 years ago when we built our new house, and back then it only cost us $80,000 to build our house. I know today it would cost me over $100,000. I know it would, but back then it was only $80,000. That's all I've got mine listed for, is $80,000. Well, you see, the $80,000 still comes within our 80% range. And so if they'd have a $50,000 loss, CAM will still mail them a check for $50,000 minus that $250 so they can get their house fixed back up again. Okay? But then we also have a number of people that have been members of CAM for many, many years. And Mike, you know how the years slip away. Boy, it was more like 22, 23 years ago we built our new house. And back then it only cost us $60,000 to build our new house. I know today it would cost me over $100,000, probably $120,000 or $140,000 today. But back then it was only $60,000, and that's all I've got mine listed for is $60,000. Yeah, my representative did say something a couple years ago about we need to increase the value on this and we need to update it. But, Mike, we just never got around to doing anything. We've still only got ours listed for $60,000. Well, now, if this family would have a $50,000 loss, now we've got a problem. Because, you see, the $60,000 that they've got their house, he already admitted it would cost $100,000 or $120,000 to build that house today. He already admitted that, see? And And since they've only got their house listed for $60,000, $60,000 is only three-fourths of our minimum. $60,000 is only three-fourths of $80,000. They've only been putting three-fourths of their share into the hat every time we were passing the hat. They were only putting in three-fourths of their share. And since they've only been willing to share three-fourths of what they should have been sharing, now when they have a loss, CAM's only going to share three-fourths of their loss with them. So we're only going to mail them a check for $37,500 minus the $250. And, hey, we don't want any hard feelings. Mike, you mean I've been a member of this outfit all these years, and now when I have a loss, you mean that's all you're going to share with me? Well, I'm sorry. But whose fault is it they didn't update it a couple years ago when their representative reminded them that we need to increase the value on it? So, yes, please, it is important. Every couple years, you need to get a hold of Marvin and say, hey, Marvin, could you come over to our house tomorrow night? We need to sit down and look at this. We haven't changed this thing for a long time, Marvin. Yeah, we did remodel our house a couple years ago. We put in some new kitchen cabinets for Mother, and we remodeled the bathroom, and we put a sunroom on the back of the house, and we didn't increase the value on it when we did that. Oh, yeah, and that old washing machine, that $200 washing machine gave out, and my wife wanted one of them front loaders. Well, they're really nice, aren't they? They cost quite a bit of money, too, don't they? And our refrigerator, that $300 refrigerator gave out on us. Boy, you know what a new refrigerator costs today? $1,600, $2,000, even more, depending on how fancy a one you buy. And so we bought a new computer system. And, yeah, my wife even let me buy a hunting rifle a couple years ago. We need to put that on the bottom of the list there. So, yes, it's important that every couple years we look at things and make sure that we got things updated. We don't want any hard feelings. Any item that you have that's valued over $500 should be itemized on a separate line. Any animals that you have that are over $1,500 each should be itemized separately. And then we put down the word miscellaneous to cover all the little stuff. Make sure you list the major appliances, the stove, the refrigerator, the washer, the dryer, the freezer, the computer. Then just write down the word miscellaneous and put down an adequate amount. $10,000, $12,000, just to cover all the rest of the stuff. You don't have to list the blender and the toaster and the electric skillet. You don't have to do that. Just make sure you get the major appliances and then write down the word miscellaneous and put down $12,000 or $15,000, whatever you is an adequate amount. Same way out in the shop, all your shop equipment, your woodworking tools, make sure you list those tools and then just write in the word miscellaneous and write down maybe $4,000 or $5,000. Cover all the electric hand drills, all the socket sets and the wrench sets and impact wrenches and all those items. So just write down the word miscellaneous and put in an adequate amount. Here's a list of the different types of perils that CAM would share. Whether it's fire damage, wind damage would include tornadoes, hurricanes. You can see it's a pretty complete list. Flood damage, yes. You don't have to, if you happen to live in a floodplain, you don't have to have a special flood insurance. CAM will cover you, even on flood damage. Theft, vandalism, livestock losses, suffocation, electrocution. You've got some animals out there in the pasture field under a tree and they get hit by lightning. CAM will share the loss with you on that. Okay, here's a picture of a dairy farm, Napanee, Indiana. Some of you might be acquainted with Bishop Lyle Miller, Lyle and Ada, that's their farm. And Lyle's mother and father, Bishop Homer Miller. Homer and Linda live right across the road from the farm. Their house had some damage done to it as well. Now, Brother Homer has gone to his reward. But this is his son, Lyle, that owns the farm there. And Lyle used to have two silos standing there. The bigger silo was almost empty when it fell right across the top of the barn there, just destroyed that old barn. Now, they had sold their milk cows about a year before this, but he was still feeding cattle. See the Holsteins there in the barnyard? Here he had a tool shed. Down here he had an implement shed. It's completely gone. This here was just a lean-to that was on the back side of the shed, but the shed is gone. Over here they have a pond, and they had built a cabin beside, he's a minister, and they get a lot of company. So they'd build a cabin there beside the pond for a guest house. That cabin was completely gone. They never even found the furniture that was inside the cabin. It was just gone. this two-story house, that farmhouse there, was turned on the foundation, and it was racked on an angle like that. 100-year-old house, turned on the foundation and racked on an angle. Now, what do you do with a mess like that? Nothing to do but to tear it down and start over. This funny-looking thing right there was a grain bin like that one. This one here used to set way up there. It went for a ride. That's what wiped out the garage there behind the house. And that's where it ended up, right on top of the lean-to there. The storm hit at 10 o'clock at night, quarter after 10 when the storm hit. The whole family was down in the basement. They knew there were tornado warnings out. They were all down in the basement. Nobody got hurt. It happened on a Thursday night. On Saturday, they fed lunch to between 130 and 140 volunteers that were there to help clean up the mess. It happened in October. My wife and I were down there in Indiana a couple months later to visit, and we stopped by there to visit Lyle. And I went to school with Lyle. He was just one grade behind me in school. I've known Lyle most of my life. In fact, he's a bishop, and he had even helped out with the bishop oversight on our church up there in Wisconsin for a couple of years. And so, yes, I've known Lyle most of my life. And we stopped to visit him that day, and things looked different around there. They had the old barn completely cleaned away. They did save the freestall barn. They just put a new front end on the freestall barn. This shed was all cleaned away. Right there where that building is where they built a nice new pull building for an implement shed. It has a nice shop on the front end of it. This here, it was all cleaned away. The house, the garage, that grain bin was all cleaned away. Here, if you look close, you can see where the garden used to be. Right there where the garden used to be is where they built their new house. We were there on a Friday in December, and the carpet layers were coming on Monday. And by the end of the week, they moved into their new house. It was 9 weeks from the time the storm hit. 9 weeks, and they moved into their brand new house. Yeah, they were very thankful for all the help they had. I still remember when we went down there to visit them that day. I remember some of their neighbors had big piles of trash out in the front yard. And I asked Lyle, hey, what's the deal? How come your neighbors don't get their trash hauled away? And guess what he told me? He said, well, Mike, those people had to put new roofs on their houses. But their adjuster from their commercial insurance company hasn't been out to settle up with them yet. They can't get their trash hauled away until the insurance company settles up with them. And this is 2 months after the storm. They hadn't even seen the adjuster yet from their commercial insurance company. And here Lyles were moving into their brand new house already. They were very thankful for their mutual aid. A friend of mine took this picture for me. There you can see what their new house looks like. The garage is on the other end. There you can see that new implement shed. See the shop windows here on the end? He even has a little lean-to roof on the end of his shop there. Right there is where that dairy barn used to sit. You can see the new front on the freestall barn. Even has a new grain bin. Here, see the pond? Right there is where that cabin used to sit. We were at their house for Sunday dinner about 2 years ago. And they'd made a scrapbook. I mean, Ada showed us her scrapbook of pictures. And they told us about all the help they got. They were very thankful for their mutual aid. Okay, if somebody has a loss of some type, the claim adjustment is taken care of by the local representative. He gets two other men to go with him and look at the damage. And so, no, we don't have to send somebody out here from Middlebury, Indiana, every time something happens. No depreciation on equipment. Whatever amount you have your equipment listed for, that's the amount that CAM will share with you if you have a total loss on that piece of equipment. I didn't even understand how significant that was. A couple years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine on the telephone one day, and he happens to live up in Canada. Now, CAM does not go across the border. We don't have any property listed up in Canada, okay? He's with a different insurance company up there. But he had bought a used farm tractor about 7 years ago, and he paid $12,000 for that used tractor. And he had it listed on his insurance policy for $12,000. And he had that tractor for about 3 years, and one day that tractor caught fire, and it burned up. And his insurance company sent an adjuster out there to settle up with him. And they offered him $3,500. Boy, you talk about a slap in the face. He said, Mike, I paid $12,000 for that tractor. It was a used tractor when I bought it. It was all depreciated out. And I had it listed in my insurance policy for $12,000. And they offered him $3,500. He was not a very happy camper. Believe me, he was not a happy camper. And I had to be careful what I said. It was none of my business. And I told him, no, that's not right. And that's not the way CAM operates, I told him. And all of a sudden, I realized what that means when we say no depreciation on equipment. And yes, we've got more loggers up in our church in Wisconsin. We've got more loggers than we do farmers. And about a year ago, one of the men in our church had a piece of logging equipment, about 2 years ago, actually. And that thing caught fire out in the woods. And they did have a fire extinguisher. They tried to knock it down, but it was too hot. They couldn't get it. And it toasted that machine. It fried it to a crisp. It was a total loss. Now, that's a forwarder. Well, they call it a packerback is what they call it, okay? But brand new, that machine's over $200,000. Now, they use them hard. They use them every day. And it was 8 years old. It was half worn out. And he had that machine listed on his enlistment for $100,000. And remember, we do have a 5% deductible on our commercial. And it was listed for $100,000. It happened on Monday morning. Saturday, there was a check in his mailbox for $95,000. The following Tuesday, he went and bought a used machine so he'd get back to work again because he was dead in the water, no income. So happened on Monday. The check was in the mailbox on Saturday. And the following Tuesday, he went and bought a used machine so he'd get back to work again. So, yes, he was very thankful for the quick service. There we go. How about a barn raising? The top picture was taken at 8:30 in the morning. The bottom picture was taken at 3:30 in the afternoon. Not a bad day's work, huh? Now, the fine print said there were 227 men on the job, and I'm sure that included the BUVA. Now, it didn't say how many ladies were there to fix lunch, but I'm sure there were a bunch. And we don't have mountains like that in our part of Wisconsin. I think that picture was taken in Pennsylvania somewhere. But Virginia Schwarzengruber lives out in Idaho, and she took those pictures, and she gave me permission to use them. I thought that was sort of interesting. Yes, we need fire. Well, we hope we don't need them, but we should have fire extinguishers. And yes, it even happened at our house a number of years ago. My wife and I were gone for a couple days, but our daughter was working in the kitchen, and she thought she smelled something hot over by the basement door, and she went over there, and she opened the basement door, and here there was smoke coming out of the electrical box. Well, my nephew was working out the driveway on a piece of farm equipment. She ran over to the door, and she yelled out to Andy, and Andy came running in the house. Now, honest, William, I did have a fire extinguisher right inside the corner of my basement door, but my daughter didn't know it. She ran over to the stairway that went upstairs to her bedroom. She knew Dad had a fire extinguisher in that stairway. I always figured if there was going to be a chimney fire up there, I wanted to have my fire extinguisher down at the bottom of the stairs so I wouldn't have to run all the way up to the chimney to get the fire extinguisher. Well, she ran over there and she grabbed that one. By the time they got over the basement door, that thing had burst into flames already, and it was burning on the 2x4 studs behind the electrical box. And that cheap little fire extinguisher, it was one of them $13.50 jobs you buy at the hardware store. And that fire extinguisher helped save our house that day. And our old farmhouse is not very fancy, but I'll tell you what, it looked pretty good still standing there the next day when Mother and I got home. So, yes, we need fire extinguishers. And you know, it's one thing to get wiped out by a tornado. Sometimes it's really embarrassing if we have a fire, if we didn't even have a fire extinguisher close by. And so, now somebody told me recently, now Mike, don't go into Walmart and buy one of them cheap ones with a plastic head on it. Spend a couple more dollars and get one with a metal head on top. They don't leak the pressure out quite as fast. And so I'll let that one up to you. But we need fire extinguishers. We need them in the house, in the garage, out in the shop. Yeah, especially if your farm shop looks anything like mine does. The wind's always got some dead leaves blowing in there or some hay or straw. And you know how it is. You got the welding helmet on. You're busy fixing that piece of equipment. Or using the cutting torch, and you don't even find out that the sparks started a fire behind you. It happened in a pallet shop here a couple years ago. One of our members, it was at the end of the day. All the employees had gone home already. The boss's son was doing some repair work on one of the machines. I don't even know if he was running the welder or if he was running a grinder. It doesn't really matter, but he had a helmet on. He didn't even know that the sparks had started a fire behind him until he felt the heat of the fire on the back of his head. By that time, it was too late. That whole pallet shop burned to the ground. So, yeah, even a five-gallon bucket full of water, ask my boys. We used to run over to the milk house and get a five-gallon bucket of water before you light the torch. Or when I took the torch over to the feed room to fix them silage conveyors, I always made sure I had a bucket of water standing. I decided if I was going to have a fire, I wanted that bucket of water sitting right there. Awful cheap. Awful cheap. So it's part of good stewardship. How about the pickup truck? I've had a couple guys tell me their pickup trucks caught fire. Awful good idea to have a fire extinguisher in your pickup truck. Okay, a couple years ago, our representatives approved a charity fund grant program to provide assistance to individuals with a financial hardship. Maybe he got hurt out on the job. Maybe he couldn't work for a couple months, or whatever the case might be. Our charity fund is actually a matching grant. And so if the local church decides, hey, look, this family had an emergency, they got a big hospital bill, or whatever the case might be. No, they didn't get hit by a tornado, they didn't have a fire, but they had some kind of an emergency. And the local church decides to lift an offering to help them out. CAM would like to pitch in and help too. So we'll match the church's offering up to $1,000. We actually set up a special account at the office. We're taking 1% of all the money that comes in and putting it into the special account for these charity fund grants. If we haven't personally had to experience the kind of trauma that goes along with having a disaster, sometimes it's difficult for us to imagine what our brother is going through. But we need to be there for him, offer him compassion and encouragement. So yes, when disaster strikes, whether it's a fire or whether it's a storm, CAM is here to help. That used to be a house. I don't think I can imagine what it would feel like to come home and that's all you've got left. That picture was taken in Davis County, Indiana. Yeah, mutual aid is an attitude. It's a privilege to help others. And there are many blessings to be shared from working together as a brotherhood. So that's why we're here. CAM does also have a medical resharing pool. I do have just a couple of slides that I'll show quickly on that one, if you'll bear with me. And I'm aware that your churches here in the area do have your own medical sharing plan. I thought it might be of interest to you. Now, our medical resharing pool is a total separate entity from our property plan. It's two separate sets of books, okay? Two separate checking accounts. And you don't have to be a member of both plans in order to be a member of the one or the other. It's optional, all right? But the same board of directors does oversee both plans. Our medical resharing pool was organized way back in 1973, about 37 years ago. It's not a health insurance, just a number of churches that pitch in and help each other with the medical expenses of their members. Our plan is divided into two groups. We've got our basic plan, and then we have a senior plan for those that have Medicare A and B. Here's a list of the different expenses that we share. Testing facilities, that would include things like lab work, blood tests, MRIs, CAT scans, that type of thing. Surgeries, hospitalization, ambulance expenses, prescription drugs, maternity cases, speech therapy, physical therapy. Now, we only share in a limited way on things like dental and hearing and vision. Only if somebody got hurt in an accident, they need to have a surgery on their eyes or need to have a surgery on their mouth. Hospice care, we do share up to $150 a day for up to 3 months. On psychiatric care, we only share the prescription drugs on that. Now, the only time we share nursing home expenses, if somebody got transferred from the hospital to a nursing home, just to help keep the bill down, that's the only time that we share nursing home expenses. We do have a 10-month waiting period for pre-existing conditions. We ask that ultrasounds are limited to one, unless there's complications. Now, here's a list of expenses that we do not share. If somebody would choose to have an abortion, we would not share that. Treatment of alcohol abuse, or treatment for tobacco use, or treatment for illegal drug use and sexual immorality. We don't share those type of expenses. Bone marrow transplants, we don't share. Chiropractic treatments, we don't. Electives, we don't share on funeral and burial expenses. Somebody had chemo and they want to get a hair transplant or wiggers, and we would not share that. Non-approved prescriptions, we don't share. But yeah, we do appreciate having excellent facilities available. I hope we do. And experienced doctors. Some of you maybe saw some pictures that they emailed back from Haiti a couple years ago after that earthquake hit down in Haiti. And yes, they were putting up tents down there and calling it a hospital. And you and I have got the best facilities in the world available when we need them. I hope we appreciate that. Okay, our medical plan does have a $1,500 deductible. The member pays the first $1,500, and then that member also pays 20% of the bill. And the rest of our churches pay the other 80% of the bill. Now his 20% is only on the next $10,000. So the most that he would have there would be $2,000 plus the $1,500. $3,500 would be the most that that family would have to pay. The rest of our churches pay the rest of the bill from there on up. We don't have a limit on that. Okay? On the senior plan, those that have Medicare A and B, they don't have a deductible because Medicare pays the first $10,000 on their hospital bill. Okay? They do have a 20% copay for prescriptions. Otherwise, they do get the same coverage as those on the basic plan. Assessments are based on the claims that come in. Every group that we have has their own secretary, treasurer, keeps all the records for the people in their group. At the end of every 3 months, at the end of each quarter, that secretary filled out a little report, how many hospital bills there are, how many members you have, mails that report to Middlebury. At Middlebury, when they get all these reports, they total up all the hospital bills, divide it by the total number of members, and that becomes the quarterly assessment. That becomes everybody's share for the last 3 months. And yes, those assessments do fluctuate from one quarter to the next because we just take whatever hospital bills, whatever bills we have, total them all up and divide it by the total number of members. It's a very simple plan. Now that bottom paragraph, if we do have someone that's over the age of 65 that does not have Medicare A and B, maybe he signed a Social Security exemption, for example. He can still be a part of our plan, but we do assess him an additional $375 a quarter. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that, but for those people that have Medicare A and B, if you sign up for Medicare when you turn 65, if that's in 2012, they will deduct $115 per month from your Social Security check to pay for that Medicare Part B. Part A is free of charge. But Medicare B, they'll deduct $115 per month. So if you multiply that times 3 months for a quarter, that's $345 that that person's getting deducted from his Social Security check, okay, to pay for that. Now, for this brother that signed a Social Security exemption, he's been saving all his own money, we assess him an additional $375 so that we're trying to keep it fair for all the seniors, okay? Okay, sounds great, Mike. What does it cost? Okay, for those on the basic plan, here's what. These are averages for the four quarters each year. 2006, it was running $650 per member per quarter. Then it dropped down to $542 per member per quarter. And then 2008, 2009, 2010, it was averaging right around $420 per member per quarter. Now, for a married couple, you double that. So, yes, $850 every 3 months is what it was averaging there for three. Now, last year, it jumped up a little over $500. So, around $1,000 per family each quarter. But that includes all the children that are living at home that are under the age of 19. Now, once those young people reach the age of 19, they get to sign up individually. Okay? And so, yeah. $1,000 per family, average, per quarter. So around $4,000 per family per year is what it's been averaging. Now, our young people, they sign up individually. We give them a 50% discount until they reach the age of 26 or until they get married and they're expecting a baby, and then we let them pay the full rate. Those on the senior plan that have Medicare A and B, their quarterly assessments have been averaging between $510 per member, and last year it was close to $600 per member per quarter. Okay? So that'd be close to $2,400 per year. But yes, when emergencies arise, we are thankful for mutual aid. We're thankful for medical technology. And that baby was just a month old, diagnosed with RSV, a respiratory virus. It was a very serious condition. But thankfully, there was an experienced doctor there that recognized how serious it was. And he said, we better get this baby hooked up to a respirator right away. We better get him hooked up to an IV because this baby is probably going to get sicker before he gets better. And that doctor was exactly right. That baby's life hung in the balance for 2 or 3 days. But God was merciful, spared his life. That young lad is 12 years old today, and he's healthy. That's one of my grandsons. Yes, we're very thankful for medical technology. If we have a new group that wants to join our plan, first, they need to have their own local committee, at least 3 people on their local committee. They have their own guidelines. They have their own bylaws. They have their own secretary, treasurer, keeps all the records for the people in their group. They have their own separate checking account. And we encourage the local group to have their own reserve fund. Because remember, I said these quarterly assessments fluctuate. And some of our groups have their own reserve fund. And when there's a high quarter with high assessments, let's just use part of our own reserve fund and help level out those quarterly payments. It's much easier for some of our younger families, especially if we have even budget payments. But maybe the local church wants to provide assistance. Maybe they've got a single mother that they'd like to help out, a widow or something. Or maybe they've got a young family that wants to adopt a baby. And even though adoption's not covered by the rest of the plan, if the local church has their own reserve fund, they can pitch in and help that young couple with their adoption expenses if they so choose. But each church secretary is responsible to keep all the records for their group. And each secretary sends a report of the total claims and members to CAM each quarter. We do encourage our members to negotiate for cash discounts, prepay discounts. And if one of our members negotiates for an extra discount over and beyond the normal discount that hospital offers, we do give them credit for up to half of that amount toward their deductible. Also, a family does not pay more than two $3,500 deductibles in 1 year, okay? Or if it's a single mother, she will not pay more than one $3,500 deductible in 1 year. Immigrant is an outfit out of Toledo, Ohio. We encourage people, if you know that you need to have a surgery to get a hernia fixed or whatever the case might be, you know in advance, we suggest you call this outfit. It's a good organization to work with. Okay, that's the end of my slides. If we could have the lights, please. Maybe somebody's got a question on something. I'll try to answer your questions for you. We do not insist that you keep your house at home locked up, your shed at home locked up, no. But a tool trailer that's parked out on a job site, yes, we do require that if you want your tools out there on the job site to be covered for theft, your tools do have to be locked up in the trailer or in the garage or in the house when you and all of your men leave the job site. But we're just talking about out on a job site. We're not talking about at home. Okay? Yes, in the back there. What if it's stolen during working hours? I should mention here, anytime something is stolen, we do require a police report. If it's stolen during working hours, boy, I'm sure glad I'm not in charge of the claims department. Hey, I don't have an answer for you. But I think we would probably share that loss, but I'm not in charge of claims. I can't honestly tell you that one. But yes, we do require a police report. And the reason for that is real simple. Maybe somebody's boat and motor got stolen, and it might be 2-3 months later, and maybe the police are doing a drug bust over in the next county. And boy, these people were busy. Look at all this merchandise they drug home. There even sits a boat and a motor. I wonder where that came from. Well, that sheriff will go back to his office, and he'll check his list, see if anybody reported a stolen boat. And if he doesn't have a record of any, he'll get on the telephone. He'll start calling the sheriffs in the neighboring counties. Anybody have a stolen boat? We picked up a boat. And you might get a phone call. Hey, they picked up a stolen boat. Would you like to go take a look at it, see if it's yours? So, yes, we do require a police report so that hopefully you'll get your stuff back. But if you didn't file a police report, they don't have any records of it. They don't know where that stuff comes from. So, and likewise on livestock losses, if we do require a veterinarian report when that animal dies from heat stress or suffocation, gets hit by lightning or something. We do require a veterinarian report on dead animals. Anyone else? Hey, time to go home. Thank you very much for being here tonight. And by the way, I guess I didn't really come out and say it, but I think we understood where the money comes from to pay all the, it comes from him and 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 from Mike. Yeah, we're all in this together. So thank you for being part of CAM. And if you've got any suggestions, talk to Marvin. Tell him, hey, Marvin, next time you go up there to Middlebury to one of them meetings, I got a suggestion for you. We're a small company. We're a brotherhood. We're not always the cheapest, but we're always brothers. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm going to turn it back over to Marvin.